Welcome back here to X's and Bros on the Michigan Sports Network. Danica Halen, Ryan Elke, Anthony Bellino, all joining you. Join us now in the Meijer Supercenter guest line covering the National Football League for 538. Our good friend Ty Schalter, find him on Twitter at Ty Schalter. Find his podcast as well with one of our old buddies, Michael Shoddy. It's the Three and Out podcast. You can find it at 3outpod.com. First and foremost, Ty, thank you for taking the time to join us. How are you? How's life? How are things, my friend?
I'm doing great. Obviously, just put a bow on the regular season, but we've got tons of exciting playoff football coming up. And, you know, kids are wrapping up the first semester of school. And you know, we're on the come up now. We're past that winter solstice, and it's getting lighter and easier every day until the off season.
Right. And for some of our teams, like our Detroit Lions, it's the off season already. But, you know, I wanted to get your take before we hop into the playoff picture. Just your overall thoughts on how that 2021 campaign went for Dan Campbell and company in year number one. I don't know. It feels different. I've been saying it feels different. I don't know if people believe me or if they think I'm just drinking that Honolulu blue and silver Kool-Aid or whatnot. But Brad Holmes, Chris Spielman, Dorsey, you look at Campbell, you look at, you know, Aubrey Pleasant, Aaron Glenn, and Deuce Staley. It just feels like this group it feels like they got it right by hiring this entire squad of individuals to lead this team.
Yeah, you know, and it's can't blame anybody for looking at it two ways. You know, number one, 3-13-1, it's not good enough. Brad Holmes said it at his press conference wrapping up the season. 3-13-1, it's not good enough, and it's not, you know, nobody's passing out awards or handing out banners. This is still a team that has number two overall pick coming up in this draft, and that's not where this team wants to be. It's not where these fans want to be, and the scene way too much of it. I mean, AC, I was like, I'm 40 years old, right? I'm 40 years old. The Lions have picked in the top 10 20 of those 40 times. So it's like, this is what we're dealing with. So I appreciate that. But at the same time, it's Kool-Aid. It's cornbread. You look at Dan Campbell and how this team got better from the start to the finish. You look at so many pieces that the Lions were expecting to have that they didn't have. Look at the injuries they have. Of course, you know, Taylor Decker didn't play for the first half of the season. Frank Ragnow gone early. Romeo Okwara, a great re-signing, the kind of homegrown re-signing that you love to see. That's so rare in this league. It's so rare for Detroit that they draft a guy, develop him into a legitimate player, and then re-sign him to a decent, but manageable contract. And, you know, wow, great coup of a signing, managed to keep him around and blows the Achilles. Jeffrey Okuda, this was supposed to be his big year to step up in year two. He goes down for the year. I mean, all these things went wrong, but then so many things went right. Dan Campbell, that coaching staff, you know, Aaron Glenn, you can't say enough. A lot of these position coaches, a lot of these former players stepping up, putting players in position to win. And that's what you want to see. You want to see that growth. And you want to see the foundation being laid. You want to see a direction. You want to see an identity. It's fun. Like, think about this. Matt Patricia, after the first year, after the second year, and certainly in the third year, nobody wanted to watch the Lions. They were bad and they were boring. You knew what you were going to get. They were going to go out there and lose, and they were going to go out there and lose in a way that was not fun to watch. This Lions team has been so fun to watch. You're actually sitting there going, dang, I wish the Lions were still in this. I wish there was more. Each of the three Matt Patricia seasons, you're thinking, I want to get to the end of this. I want to get back to at least reading the news and hoping that, you know, the draft might go well or they might sign somebody exciting. But I think everything is pointing up. And Anthony, that's what you want to see. But then that's also what you have to see, like I said, when you're picking second overall.
Yeah, ain't that the truth? And the way that the defense responded, I mean, yeah, there were plenty of times that I thought this season, you know, that under the previous management that this team would have folded, right? They would have just mailed it in about week six or week seven, yeah. And it would have gotten ugly. But these guys still cared. They still played hard, and I'll still continue to give them a lot of credit for doing so, not putting a stamp on it, mailing it in, and ended up going 3-3 in their final six games. I think there's definitely, you know, some signs that point towards a positive future. Speaking of the future, tomorrow at 4:30 on NBC, we'll kick off Super Wild Card Weekend, because everything always sounds better when you put the word super in front of it. So we'll have the Raiders on the road against the Cincinnati Bengals, 27 degrees allegedly at kickoff at Paul Brown Stadium down there in the nasty natty. I don't know what to make of this Raiders team. I mean, you talk about a team that's been through so much. Derek Carr, we got to give him a lot of credit. You know, they advanced because they wouldn't tie against the Chargers and that debacle that was last week for the LA football team. But now taking on the Cincinnati Bengals, I just don't know, man. I got a really good feeling about Joe Burrow and company. But every time I feel good about something, something bad happens. So I just, I'm this is a really intriguing matchup here for game number one.
Yeah, and I just wrote at 538.com. It just went up on Thursday. The Bengals, this, the thing that we missed in the Raiders playing for a win instead of grinding out the clock and taking that tie against the Chargers is everyone's like, oh, yeah, see, that way the Raiders got the Bengals instead of the Chiefs. Well, the Raiders don't have that much better a shot at beating the Bengals than the Chiefs. Before Week 18, when the Bengals sat all their starters, gave Ja'Marr Chase a couple of catches so he could break the Bengals season, single season receiving record. Okay, they were the hottest team in football. They had just beaten the Chiefs in a shootout, and this is a team, the Bengals, that were thinking, is this the most dangerous team in the NFL right now? Is this the team, certainly an AFC, that nobody wants to play? This has been, you know, the AFC was these guys were tripping on themselves toward the finish. And part of that was the Chiefs tripping over the Bengals. And so now you think, okay, the Bengals match up against the Raiders. You know, you love the Raiders. Great story of what Rich Bisaccia has done in, you know, a couple of very tough situations he's had to deal with. And okay, but this is still not a team that has the talent to compete with your Patriots and your Bills and your Chiefs and your Titans. But the Bengals can absolutely go toe-to-toe with any of those teams, and now the path is so much easier. They're likely to get the Titans in round two if everything shakes out chalk. And that's a really exciting team. I love what they're doing, and I'm with you. I think the Bengals are in great position, and I think we're going to see these guys. You know, Joe Burrow believes that he can do this. He knows that he can do this. He expects to go toe-to-toe with Patrick Mahomes and out-compete him. He expects to go toe-to-toe with anybody else in the AFC, anybody else in the NFL, and play better. And the more he keeps doing it, the more I'm starting to believe it too.
You know, it does kind of feel like Joe Burrow, like the destiny that was for his time at LSU, the level of confidence that that young man plays the game with is very Mahomes-esque. And it does make you feel like here comes Joe Burrow out of the tunnel, that great video from LSU. He's firing up the stogie after the national championship. I think there's a lot of that confidence and that swagger there that carries over. And I just, I'd be real afraid to play the Bengals. In game number two on tomorrow night, we'll get at 8:15 on CBS, the Patriots against the Bills. A lot of people are very intrigued in this matchup. One of the most intriguing things about this game is the fact that it's allegedly going to be 3 degrees at kickoff. And Bart Scott said yesterday on ESPN that the best way to get the blood flowing is to take a Viagra. Now, I don't know. I'm not a medical professional or anything like that. I don't know if that's what you want to do, but whatever. If it worked for Bart Scott, I would just say, like, rub some Vicks on it, I suppose. But these two teams met in terrible conditions earlier in the year. The Patriots threw the ball 3 times. They completed 2 passes for Mac Jones for 19 total yards and won a football game 14-10 in Buffalo. Here we go. Terrible conditions once again on Saturday night. These two teams meeting up in Buffalo again. The Patriots ran through them. Can the Bills defense find a way to respond in this game to what was basically getting steamrolled in that game earlier in the year?
Yeah, if you don't attempt a pass for 4 hours, contact your doctor.
That's the only part of that game that needed Viagra was the passing game.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, and the Bills went to Foxborough, they went out to New England and they kind of got that revenge already. And this is weird. This is how this tends to play out with this rivalry, is that Buffalo thinks that they can be a playoff team, they can be a contender, they can upset New England, they get New England at home, New England takes care of business on the road, but then they come back and then they get them at Foxborough. We've seen this a few times over the years, going back to like the Tyrod Taylor year, right? But I think Buffalo, look, this comes down to Josh Allen. Can he prepare enough? Can he be put in a good enough situation? And can he execute in this cold weather? You know, does this play towards his strengths enough? And can, you know, the offensive line and the running game of the Bills keep that offense balanced enough that Josh Allen can keep throwing? You know, Mac Jones, like you said, I mean, he only attempted 3 passes in that first game. They just dominated the Bills physically. That happens again. that's going to be very tough, because when you can't get a team off the field, your defense gets tired, and it's a feedback loop, right? And the Patriots keep believing in themselves. Their offensive line keeps believing in themselves. They keep driving you down the field and humiliating you. That's a very tough situation to be in. At the same time, Mac Jones, you know, credit to him, he's had a fantastic rookie year, I think better than anybody expected, but he's also nowhere near Josh Allen in terms of a passer, in terms of a competitor, in terms of somebody you can just give the ball to and go make something happen out of nothing. These two coaches, these two quarterbacks, the pressure is all on them, and these conditions do play in the Patriots' hands, but I can't imagine we see a repeat that domination that we saw earlier in the year. I think both teams are going to be prepared, and Buffalo, John McDermott has to have something in his bag of tricks to stop what happened last time from happening, because that just can't happen twice.
No, it definitely can't. There are two games on our slate on Sunday that I think will be the two that'll shouldn't be anything crazy. The 1 o'clock game on Fox between the Eagles and Buccaneers. I just don't know. I don't see how Tom Brady and the Bucs would lose that game to a Philly team. And then the nightcap in that. And that Sunday is the 8:15 kickoff on NBC. Easy for me to say. The Chiefs against the Pittsburgh Steelers. I mean, you look at those games on papers, you have to imagine that the favorites are just rolling in those two games.
Yeah, absolutely. It's tough when you see things that are chalk and just go, okay, this is chalk. But it is what it is. The expanded playoff field, it's not like the 6 and 7 seeds are in each conference are bad per se, but there's also just a clear gap between when you look at your Steelers's and then the teams that they're going to be playing, top 2-3 seeds across the board on both sides. It's great that they're in. Tournament's going to get a little bit more of that March Madness feel, where like winning, like getting into the tournament is a win, and then getting to the conference championship games is a win, and then making it to the Super Bowl is a win. But you were never really in contention. If you're that 6th seed, if you're that 7th seed now, you were never going to take down the 1 or the 2.
Yeah, you're playing with house money, right? You got there. This is great. Right. Everyone can kind of celebrate that. Roethlisberger can kind of go off in the sunset, and Philly's like, okay, we're making progress. But anything you do from here on out that's a positive, I mean, good for you. But there's no expectation there. Now the 4:30 game on CBS, however, the Niners against the Cowboys, maybe sort of regenerating some of that rivalry hatred between these fan bases. That one should be a lot of fun, because Dak Prescott and the Cowboys have looked pretty good this year. The Niners with Jimmy G, right? They got that insurance policy and Trey Lance, and they struggled a little bit to begin the season, but they kind of caught fire a little bit late, and they won I want to say something along the lines of 7 of their last 9 games. San Francisco, that's a really good matchup in Jerry's world.
Yeah, that's really exciting. And like you said, everybody over a certain age, I want to say 32, 33, 35, is going, oh my gosh, I remember these days, right? I remember this rivalry. Deion Sanders switching sides from the 49ers to the Cowboys is just like so earth shaking. I don't know if there's anything that can compare in today's game, how much that rivalry meant and how big that was, and that these teams kept meeting over and over and over for the right to go to the Super Bowl and playing great games. I think this could be a great game to watch, but I don't trust Jimmy G or Kyle Shanahan enough like I want to. I've been saying all along, I thought people were sleeping on the 49ers. They forgot how good they were 2 years ago. They forgot how good Jimmy Garoppolo was 2 years ago. They forgot how much talent they lost to COVID and to injuries. I thought the floor for the 49ers was pretty high, and I thought the ceiling for the Niners was very, very high. But again, they haven't been consistent. Some of the shine has come off Kyle Shanahan as a master strategist, master game planner, master quarterback whisperer. He mortgaged so much to bring Trey Lance in, and Lance has not played much and not played amazingly when he's played. And now here you are, you're in the playoffs, and you've got what might be the best overall team, probably the most talented team when you look at both offense and defense in the Dallas Cowboys. At the same time, I don't trust Mike McCarthy either. This is a guy who has coached his team out of the playoffs repeatedly. And, 14 months ago, we were using the word laughingstock in the same sentence as him with this team and his decision-making. So the Cowboys have come a long, long way, and they're a very stacked team. And they should win this game, but I just don't trust Mike McCarthy to make optimal decisions. And I also don't trust Kyle Shanahan to take advantage of them. So I think it's going to be a fantastic game to watch, but I don't feel confident in either of these two teams going into it.
And then for all of our Michigan listeners, the doozy on Monday Night Football, the Arizona Cardinals in an NFC West Battle Royale on the road in L.A. against Matthew Stafford and the L.A. Rams. Kelly Stafford already begging the L.A. fans, please don't sell your tickets to Arizona fans. I love the fact that she takes the social media into the internet. Good for her. I don't know. I don't know where. Ty, try to be my moral compass for me real quick, because I don't know if I want to see Arizona win because I like Kyler Murray, or if I want to see Arizona win because, well, Matthew Stafford's no longer with the Lions and I'm really interested in that next pick in the first round. You know what I mean? That's kind of how I separate myself to make me feel, oh, it's about the pick. And really it's like, nah, I don't know if I want you to be successful. I haven't quite decided yet.
You know, for me, I'm still on board with Matthew Stafford. I was before. I thought, you know, throughout that time, even when he had some of the rough stretches, I'm like, this guy is not the problem. Right. Of all the problems that the Lions have, it's not the guy under center. And I think, you know, stepping away and going to L.A., you know, I think it was as classy as possible by both sides. I think it was a great and obvious fit to go to Sean McVay and get all those weapons. And, you know, even though they lost Robert Woods, so much has gone right. They've really had a ton of great players come in during the middle of the year. They're going all in. I think it's fascinating to go, let's get Matthew Stafford everything he could possibly need, take off the governor, let him grip it and rip it, and they'll go as far as he goes. And that's fascinating to me. And I want this to work because it feels like if that doesn't work, okay, then what? And then Sean McVay, that's a $4 billion stadium that Stan Kroenke just built. There's a lot of pressure riding on this team. The Cardinals are still kind of playing with house money. If you bring back what you said, it's like this is a team that people thought would be good but not great, that they thought might be great down the road, but not great this fast. And I think Cliff Kingsbury and Kyler Murray have both answered their doubters over and over. After they got lucky through the first half of the year, they've kind of been snake bit, losing DeAndre Hopkins. They've had a couple of other key injuries, a couple other results not go their way. This is the Rams going all in on this year. They are leaving no stone unturned. They just signed Eric Weddle, for crying out loud, to come in and try and bolster that secondary. They have all their chips on the table. Arizona, no matter what happens this game, is going to be back next year, and they're going to be talented, and they're going to be dangerous. They're going to get new Hopkins back. Maybe next year is Arizona's year, but I think this is Los Angeles' year, and I want to see them at least get out of this first round and make a little noise deeper into the playoffs.
He is Ty Schalter. Find him on Twitter. Studio audience, they love him. Find him on Twitter at Ty Schalter. Find his words at 538. Check out his podcast at 3OutPod on Twitter. Ty, as always, my friend, thank you so much for your time, my man. Great to catch up with you. Great to have you on the airwaves with us, and enjoy Super Wild Card Weekend.
Absolutely, Anthony. Anytime.